This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today in Season 3, Episode 68, I chat with Gold Coast runner and coach Kyle Weiss. For having never met Kyle, we have a lot in common. Applied science degrees, podcast hosts, Athletics Australia accredited coaches, we're dads. The major difference is that he's in the Gold Coast and I'm in Brisbane. This was a fantastic chat. Kyle's such a clean talker, who is well-versed in all things running. His optimistic attitude is absolutely apparent through this entire conversation. And we finished talking about his plans for the Osaka Marathon next year in February and his plans to break the 2:30 barrier. He'll be back on here in a Road to Osaka series with Brisbane runner and Bush Jerky Track Club runner, Clive Gross. And they'll talk about their training leading up to such an event. I hope you enjoyed this listen. Kyle was fantastic, as I said, and has so much experience and insights to offer. Thank you. Well, welcome Kyle Weiss to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on here.
No dramas. I got the pronunciation right of the surname.
Yeah. I reckon that's one of the first times someone's got it first go. So, yes.
Oh, I've got to probably thank Matty Cooper, previous guest on the podcast. And I used to run with him at the Burt Squad in Brisbane. And he was just on yesterday, two in a row for me. I'm on school holidays as a teacher. And he mentioned your name. He threw it around his GC50 conversation, which he coincidentally had won last week in very strange circumstances. I thought you'd actually run it yourself, but I think you alluded to via Instagram earlier today that you weren't in it this year.
No, I was supposed to. So we have this competition, Matty and I, and that's why I enjoyed his episode from yesterday. And 2 years ago, he passed me at like the 42, 43K mark while I was cramping in the side of a car park, which he thought was quite funny. And I think he beat me by about 40 seconds in the end that day. And then last year I beat him by about 50 seconds. So we were one all in the last couple of years and the total time was almost identical. So this year was supposed to be our final race, the final battle to see who takes it out. And then we decided we'd never do it again. And then I picked up a bit of a niggle about 8 days out and perhaps had to have a couple of weeks off and didn't run. And I'd messaged him early in the week being like, oh mate, I'm in a bit of doubt for the weekend. Like, I'm not sure if I'm going to be running. This could be a 50-50. And did a test run a few days out and it was not good enough to race. And I messaged him on the Saturday morning. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, mate, I'm out. And he's like, oh, that was half the reason I was going to do this. You know, he's stuck doing this race. And he turns out that he's national champion now. So I'm sure he's very glad that he ran.
Oh, it's crazy. And I guess a local race for you because you're a Gold Coast man, Kyle. And how many times would have you done that event, the GC50?
I think I've done the 50 three or four times. And then we used to always do the relay, the 2x25K relay was really popular, but they've finished that now. So I probably did that maybe four or five times as well. So it's one of those races that as Matty alluded to in his episode, you know, it's an odd race given it's so hot, but there's not much else on that time of year, and for good reason, given the heat. And we all just kind of get drawn to it. And it's kind of feels like it's that end of year, almost like Christmas party for like everyone in running, especially on the Gold Coast. Like everyone either jumps in a race or we all just get together and go and watch. And it's always a nice way to kind of unofficially round out the year. So I still had to go down and be a part of it.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique event. Maddie and I were talking about the unique nature of it being at a very hot time of the year for Brisbane and Queensland, or Gold Coast runners for that matter. But that's part of the challenge, isn't it? It's on the concrete, no reprieve, like no shade is what I'm talking about there. And obviously a warm event. And Maddie just said for him personally, it was a oh, is a just a race that kind of suits him in terms of survival mode, and talking about for him not having that speed that some of the runners, even in the marathon, may have in those traditional like Gold Coast marathon events.
Yeah, and that's I think that's the thing that, and I liked Maddie's comments about it, which is very true in that. And I think the thing this year that was interesting is because conditions weren't actually too bad early on in the morning, like it was kind of maybe 18 or 19 degrees, which is not too bad for that race. I think there was a lot of people that were lulled into a false sense of security and probably went out a little bit harder given it felt okay. And then there was just some carnage in the back half of both the half marathon and the 50K, which was, I won't say entertaining to watch, but it was nice to be sitting on the sidelines rather than being out there in the middle of it this year.
Yeah, a little bit cruel maybe to say that, but before we continue, I might ruin the section, excuse me, of when I ask you about who you are, but I can't sort of control myself here because we have so much in common, yet we've never met, and I've only come across your name probably in the last few months after joining the Brisbane group up here on the north side of Brisbane, that is the Bush Turkey Track Club. And I know you coach one of the athletes there, and I'll give him a mention, Arvi Singh, is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. Yes,
And
he's doing very, very well at the moment.
he is, he's loving your coaching. So a bit of a shout out for you there. And Clive Gross, who's very much a part of coordinating, facilitating that group there. And I believe you two are also doing the Osaka Marathon, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So we've kind of been chatting a bit back and forward, and we're going to try and tee up a few runs together in the lead up to it. But it should be a good race because Clive and I's marathon PBs, I think we're like 1 second apart, 1 or 2 seconds apart. We've pretty much got identical marathon PBs. So the only top we've actually raced once, and it was this afternoon 5K relay on the Gold Coast last year, and I felt absolutely terrible. And I took the last leg in the lead, and he ran straight over the top of me and passed me with like a K to go, and it absolutely flogged me. So the one he's definitely 1-0 against me. But yeah, we're looking forward to having a good run at Osaka, and I think we both kind of want to try and see if we can dip under that 2:30 barrier. So we will hopefully get to share plenty of kilometers over there.
Awesome to hear, mate. If you enjoyed this experience, I'm hoping to offer you an opportunity to come back on here to chat all things Osaka and potentially like a Road 2 kind of a series, but we'll be in touch more than likely after this conversation. Got to get this done first. But what I failed to mention just earlier about us, what we have in common, we're both Australian athletics coaches. We've done the level 2 recreational running course there through that pathway. And obviously we coach with that. We've both got children. You got one, two, three?
I've got one at the moment. That's
Okay.
plenty at the moment.
All right. And we both studied also in the applied science realm. I believe now you're a qualified and practicing physiotherapist. Not that I went that pathway, but yeah, a lot of things there that we do have in common. It must be the separation locationally, you Gold Coast, me Brisbane.
Like we were saying that just off air before, a lot of similarities. And I don't know about you, but I feel like all of those things for me just kind of lend into one another. Obviously, going through the applied science degrees, kind of learning about all that stuff probably kicked my interest off in running. I was obviously running at the time, and then I went down the physio pathway, which has been it's been quite useful when it comes to my coaching as well. I feel like I've kind of got this one part of my brain, which is like the runner and the coach that wants to push things, and I've got the physio brain on the other side that's kind of balancing each other out. So it's been a nice mix to be able to kind of flick between kind of coach and physio for a lot of runners too. But yeah, I love it. Like I said, it feels like most of my week is revolves around running, and yeah, who wouldn't want that?
Perfect, mate. I normally do have this section about the guest later in the conversation, but we'll stay here. I've loaded this up front pretty completely there. And let's think about otherwise away from the physiotherapy, the running. What can you talk to about, yeah, family life and life in the week around any of those sorts of things?
So my week at the moment, like obviously it's pretty jam-packed between kind of work. I work Tuesday to Saturday as a physio. And I kind of do most of my coaching, the bulk of my coaching stuff on a Monday. And then we kind of got Sunday as a family day. So between all of that, there's not a whole lot of free time in the week, but we still try and get out. Like I said, I'm big for just getting out and doing things. Like I said, we'll head down to the beach and do things. We have a bit of family time just with my wife and daughter. We've spent a lot of time at SeaWorld over the last few months. My daughter loves that. So for me, it's kind of, it's interesting in that for me, work is very running orientated because I mainly work with runners as a physio. That's the majority of my time. Obviously there's the coaching side of things, which very much running. And then I've kind of got my own training thrown in there as well. So there's certain times where I try to kind of get away from that a little bit, but at the end of the day, I love it. So most of my week revolves around that. But at the moment, it's a matter of spending some family time when I can. And then it's, you kind of switched on and working or training and, or doing the coaching stuff, chatting with athletes. So at the moment that feels like it's weeks just blend into each other, kind of goes very quickly and takes up the bulk of my time, but I love it. So yeah, I don't think I changed anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds pretty jam packed. What about watching of any sports? Like the cricket is on at the moment, very much so. Test cricket in Australia. Are you a cricket fan or any others that come to mind?
Yeah, I'm so funny. I didn't start running till I kind of left school, but I played rugby league all through high school. I played in the back row. I was a lot bigger than I am now. And I've always been a massive sports fan, like kind of grew up watching cricket, rugby league, bit of AFL. I pretty much could sit down and watch any sport, to be honest. I'm a sports fan, and it's just a matter of finding time to watch it all at the moment. So I tend to spend most of my time on my phone, checking KO and watching that on my phone as I can around life. But yeah, big sports fan, kind of, like I said, could happily watch anything. I think I could get around most sports. I'm a competitive person, so I tend to get drawn into anything like that and love it. If I had to pick kind of the main things I'd watch, I'd say winter's definitely rugby league for me. I've watched more AFL, I suppose, in recent years, but grew up, I was born in Ipswich and moved to the coast when I was young, but out there, like, rugby league's the only sport that they know exists pretty much. So like AFL was kind of banned on our TV as growing up as a kid, didn't even know it really existed. So I've always been a big rugby league fan and then kind of cricket in the summer. But yeah, any sport, happily watch it. Golf, I'm a big golf fan. Don't get as much time to play it anymore with life, but also a big golf fan.
Yeah, golf's a hard one to squeeze in, isn't it? You know, 4 hours probably needed on a weekend, half for a family man. And podcasting too. We've just spoken off here about sharing the same microphone, the Blue Yeti, as we talk right now, and you've got a podcast yourself. We'll come back to that because I think we've got a fair bit to squeeze in here. And before I even get to any more about you and your training and racing, Kyle, let's chat all things marathon. Andy Buchanan, and even Isabel Dor, you might have seen too on the women's side just the other week in Valencia. Andy, firstly, with the fastest now all-time Australian marathon record. And I was talking to Matty Cooper actually about Andy, and it's 2:06.22, as you probably know, but he debuted a couple of years back. It's only been 2 or 3 years, hasn't it, since Commonwealth Games, where he had run a 2:15. I think I made a mess of that with Matty actually that time, and forgotten he'd actually debuted there and mentioned a 2:12 to Matty, but it's a 2:15 down to now 2:06. So hasn't he improved in such a short period of time? And we can't point the finger at shoes on this one. This is really, I think, a combination of him being around for a while and now putting things together pretty well.
Yeah, I think he nailed it there. Like, he's just been so consistent for so long. Like, that's something I feel like I try and drill into athletes as well, is you got to play the long game. And I feel like he's the perfect example. And again, he's been on a bunch of podcasts recently as well, kind of talking about it, but that's exactly what he said. Like, he's just been chipping away at it for so long. And just, I think that's the reward you get for being that consistent for that long. And I think he's obviously reaping the reward of it. I was surprised when he ran that fast. I thought he could break the record, but I was kind of following it along and I was like, oh my gosh, like, he was on track for kind of like a tick under 2:06 for most of that race. And I thought that would just be wild that, you know, for the first time, you know, I'm used to watching these races and watching the Africans come through and then sitting there and going, oh, okay, we've got 5-10 minutes till the Australians are going to come through. Whereas I felt like I kind of watched the finish of this one and next minute Andy was right there, which was really, really cool. And the other interesting thing we've been thinking about it is, I feel like now that, you know, since Brett Robinson broke Deke's record and kind of times are falling and now Andy's got it, that everyone's now kind of going like, right, when's it going to get lowered? Like, is Brett going to take it back? And I'd almost be interested to know, like, and someone to ask Deke's, like, when he broke it, I wonder back then, was it kind of like, oh, right, now everyone's going to break it, it's just going to keep getting lowered? Or was it kind of like, oh, that no one's going to touch that anymore? Because I feel like for Andy, everyone's just kind of going, oh, he's got it for now. Like, that's kind of this, like, prevailing sentiment that he's kind of got it, but it'll get lowered now. You got other guys around. And it's an interesting one, because I'm like, I wonder if that was the same when Deke's broke, and then that stayed there for decades and no one got close to it. Like, is this a time that might stay there for longer than we think, or is it gonna open the floodgates? I don't know.
Yeah, this is where I think we can ponder on the footwear because, over years in a culmination, I think, effect of training and racing over and over, not so much just that one-off effect of the shoes. I think it has culminated in these times just improving, like you said, so frequently. Like, even I'll change sports for a second, even to swimming. Like, back in the day, it's around the 2000 Olympics time where the likes of Ian Thorpe were around and setting times which stood for years until they. I think they brought out suits in 2009 that swimmers were in and broke all the times almost in the swimming world. But I think in the running space, it has changed a bit with footwear and a few other factors now. Like you said, we just don't know if it's going to stand for so long. Gaukaut, the sprinter, 200 meters, you might have seen that,
Saw it on the
broken
weekend.
all-time Australian
Unbelievable.
record. What, 50 something years was it, Peter Norman?
It's been around for a long, long time. So it's, and I think that was our longest standing track Australian record. I think that's the, it's now the oldest one's gone. So I don't know what the new oldest one is, but yeah, it's, and I don't know because we're such in the, like, we're in the middle of the running bubble. You kind of just, we're massive fans of the sport. You kind of right in the middle of it. You don't realize, I think, how big running has become, like, worldwide in the last kind of few years, especially that. I feel like the depth from, like, the bottom up is just getting better and better. Like, there's just, everyone seems to be out running, and, like, just the depth of that kind of, like, not right at the very peak end, but just below that is just kind of ridiculous across the board now. And I think that's probably going to have a big factor in it too, that there's just so many guys chomping at the heels of the top guys, in every country, that it wouldn't surprise me if times just kind of keep dropping. But yeah, it's exciting to see. I feel like for the first time, like, we feel like we're kind of matching it with a lot of the other non-African countries with times. And I actually looked up after Randy's record. I was like, I wonder where that ranks us in, like, national records. Like, what place that puts Australia, this 206.22. And it still only puts us at 24th. And I was quite surprised at that, that there's still, like, I thought we would have been a little bit higher than that. But that's now the 24th best national record. And I think we were back in the 30s with Brett's. And I was like, that's an interesting kind of stat that shows that there's still a lot of countries that have got some fast runners around, even though we just think of the East Africans. But cool that we're moving up the list.
Yeah, and if we look at individual times as well, that's gonna go out to hundreds, isn't it? You can have at any given moment from African runners, just so many out there. And we see that 203, 204, 205, those times hit all the time, at almost every major marathon, at least out there and others. So it's exciting. And you're right, I think it's just the fact that we can't just point at the recreational athlete out there who's running a 4 or 5 hour marathon and thank them, but we can thank the group, I guess, effect that's pushing up on runners faster and faster until we get to that top tier. And then those sort of sub elite are pushing guys like Andy quicker and quicker. Hey, so I do think that, like, not anxiety, but that pressure to a capacity that from Andy is felt with, like you said, the chomping at the heels metaphor is definitely apparent.
And it's exciting. It's a cool place to be because it kind of, I feel like there's just more people that are interested in following the sport now. Like, if there was just one person that was kind of the fastest by a mile, it's not that exciting. Whereas, you've got, like, the likes of Brett Robinson, Pat Tin, and these kind of guys, and obviously kind of Liam and Tim recently, kind of more local runners, that you kind of, like, well, you kind of expect them to go out and run this fast now. So, like, the thought of now going, like, right, who's, like, Andy's a lock for the world champs now. It's like, well, there's only two spots. You got Jack Rayner, Brett Robinson, Pat Tin, and Liam Adams, Tim. Like, you got a bunch of guys right there now that you're like, well, only two of them get to make it if they all want to go. Whereas I feel like that's the first time in a while we've had, like, with the women's side, we've had it, and we saw what unfolded before Paris with the whole selection and the drama there, and kind of it made it exciting and people wanted to watch. And it didn't really feel like the male side had that kind of real depth at the top end. Whereas all of a sudden now it's like, it was previously just like, oh, well, Brett's a lock. I suppose Jack's probably going to be the next lock once he ticks it off, and maybe Pat. And but now, like we said, it's exciting again. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of years.
Yeah, a handful on both sides now. Hey, the women sort of sitting around that 220, 223, 4 time range, and the guys now sub 210. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing how that progresses in all sorts of ways. Let's get to you, Kyle, though. Your times more particularly in the running world, and I like to run through the PBs from. At least 5K up. If you have stories of running lesser, most guests don't. But if you do have any times or stories of those of a lesser length, then please go for it. But I do know you're a big fan of the marathon itself. So, yeah, fire away. 5K, let's start there.
So 5K for me is 15:25. I did that on the track at the kind of Queensland 5000 meter champs. That was 2021. And I'd run, I think, like 15:28 or 15:29 at a park run here not long before that, and thought, right, well, if I can run that at park run, like surely I'm able to run that on the track, and ran a little bit faster, probably blew up a little bit. And I'd say that's where my kind of 3K PB, I think, was like, I think I split 3K in like 9:11 in that 5K on the track. And I'd say that was probably my, that, I think that is my PB for 3K.
That
And
wasn't,
yeah, I
sorry,
was,
Runaway Bay, or was that in
no,
Brisbane?
that was in Brisbane. I think I, because my 10K, if we go, that was at Runaway Bay the year before when they had the 10,000 meter champs there. But this was the year after that. I'm just looking at them now. Yeah, that was 2021. We're up in Brisbane on the second track at QE2 there. And I was in the B race then. I can't remember, I was mid pack. I think there was plenty of fast people that night. But yeah, 15:25, which I've always had that kind of like lifelong goal of like, I'd love to run a 14:59. Like it just sounds so much faster than 15 minutes. So it's not something I've ever really focused on. Like leading into that, I probably did, 6 weeks of a bit of track stuff and kind of focused on that. But again, like I said before, like I didn't really run when I was younger or anything. So I played footy and, the thought of running 2 laps of the field kind of warming up was enough running for me. So I didn't come from that real fast kind of track background or anything. So I've never really tried to target a lot of that top end speed work. But yeah, I'm very happy with the 15:25 because I can still remember breaking 20 minutes for the first time. And I thought I was on top of the world and absolutely killing it when I ran like a 19:50 something. So to run 15:25 was cool. So yeah, that was the five. And then the 10, like I said, was at Runaway Bay. I'm in 32:56. I've only raced a couple of 10Ks. So that's one that I'm like, I'm pretty happy with that. But it's probably the slower one when you compare some of the other times that I've run around that. But again, I've run that time actually twice. And I've gone very close. I've run around that time a bunch of times. So again, not something I've really targeted, but that's that one. And then the half marathon was Gold Coast 2022. I ran 1:11:53 at Gold Coast. So that was a couple of years ago, and that was a good one. We had a good group and kind of just tucked in the pack, and it was a relatively even split. We probably slowed down a bit, about 15, 16K, and kind of was one of those races where I felt like my effort was evenly spread across the race. I kind of finished feeling like I was absolutely sprinting, but it was pretty much the same pace the whole way. So I figured that was a pretty good pacing day to kind of feel like I got it, gave it everything by the end, but the pace didn't really change at all. So that was my half. And then yeah, marathon up is where I kind of probably I'll enjoy a little bit more. So and we can chat about it later, but I've probably done a lot more like longer races than the marathon, and I've only come back to the marathon in recent years. But my PB is 2:31, 46 from Gold Coast this year. So that was a pretty good day. Like I've been talking about this 2:30 for ages, and I'd gone through halfway a bit quicker in my first couple of marathons, but decided to go a bit more conservative. And I think I went through halfway and maybe like 1:15:30, 1:15:40. And I remember I actually went back and looked at my split at 35K on the timing mat, and it was the exact time to the second I needed to run 2:29:59. So at that point, I thought, oh, this is great. Like I could be on for 2:30 here. And then, as inevitably happens in the marathon, I had about a 5K stretch of just going, what am I doing here? Like this sucks. You hit that headwind at Gold Coast when you turn around, and I just went, oh yeah, and I'm going backwards here. But managed to hang on and run that 2:31 high. So that's definitely a time that I think I'd like to get a little bit lower. But again, happy with that time. And then the other PBs, I suppose, I keep track of is my 50K one's 3:15 from GC50 2022. That was the day that Matt beat me by, I reckon, about 40 seconds. He was fourth, I was fifth. And yeah, my 100K PB is 7:53. That's probably the other one that I'm pretty happy with. That was 2019. So that was quite a while ago that I ran that one. But I was back then kind of very much gunning for the Australian age group record. So there's an under 25 Australian record for 100Ks. And that was my last shot at it when I was 24 and managed to get it. So that's one that I've always been pretty happy with. Looking back on, I don't know how I did it, because I think I did it in a pair of Nike Zoom Pegasus or something. Like this was just as super shoes were coming out. I didn't even have a pair. So I ran that in shoes that I'm like, I don't know how I managed to do that. But that's kind of where I'm at running wise. I've got a decent amount of range across that. But yeah, I enjoy the longer distances.
Yeah, we spoke about Clive Gross at the start of the conversation, Bushjockey Track Club runner, and he was last year, wasn't it, that he'd run his time, and you mentioned it was only within a second or so of each other, so you missed him by a year. That would have been an awesome runoff, and he was with Jen Gregson for a lot of it, I'm
Yeah,
sure.
well,
Well, I'm
I
guessing you
must
know
have
his
been in that
story
pack
too.
because I was 2:32
Oh,
that year,
right.
and I reckon I might have been. I was in Jen's pack until maybe like 25K, and then I kind of let them go. And I don't know what I'd have to go look what Clive's splits were through that, whether he passed me towards the end, because I was in all sorts with about 4K to go, and I ran 2:32:51, I think, at Gold Coast last year, and he was just about a minute up the road. So I have to go back and look whether we were together or not at that point, or whether he passed me. But I wasn't looking around and seeing who was around me at that point. I was just looking for the finish line. But yeah, very close times.
Awesome, mate. And out of the bunch, which one would you pick as your proudest, or you think relative to the others is the standout? If you were to boast about one of them, which one would you go to?
I'd on it like in the context of where I was at, I'm probably most proud of the 100K one, to be honest, because I was not training that well. I've trained a lot harder now than I was back then. And that's one that I'm like, the fact that I did that at 24 off not a crazy amount of training. And it was, I remember the pressure of that run because that was my last chance to get that record. And I'd been thinking about that record for years. And it was like, right, I flew to Victoria. This was out at Wangaratta. It was the Australian 100K champs. And I was like, right, this is it. This is my last shot at this race. And managed to get it. So I felt like that was one that like the pressure was on. And again, if you look at the pace, it's probably not equivalently as fast as my marathon or my half marathon, but that's probably the one that I'm like, I'm definitely proud of that one. And I'm kind of hoping that I'll rewrite my marathon PB a bit over the next, 5 or 10 years, but I don't know if I'll go back and run another 100K on the road or not. But that was one that I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah, I think to most people, if you just say you run 100 kilometers, that's enough. And a time gives some context, but it's certainly a long way, isn't it? And unique, it's certainly under the ultra bracket, 50K and above, usually. And 50 and 100 are normally the most common events, aren't they, in the ultra world? But let's get to your sort of story now, Kyle, like how this running coaching interest and just the participation in the sport itself had come about. From a young age, and where you were brought up, what sort of schools you attended to, and how that has led to you now.
So like I said, if I was born in Ipswich, kind of just west of Brisbane, so people listening to this will know where that is. And then you move to the Gold Coast in grade four. I moved to the Gold Coast. And it's went kind of local kind of Catholic primary school near home, save for high school. And like I said, like being a kid for me, like we're very outside sport orientated. I was out kicking a footy for hours every afternoon. We kind of just were out, the typical like out till sunset, come home, have dinner kind of thing. So I was always out kicking a footy somewhere or playing cricket or doing something. And yeah, like I said, it was very much a like running was not something that was on my radar kind of through school at all. And then kind of got through school. And I remember when I played team sport most of my kind of youngest life. And I remember those multiple times when I got to like 15, 16, where I used to get really annoyed where I would be putting in like 100% effort in these games and some people in the team weren't. And let's say we were losing games. And I found that really annoying that like I could put in 100% and like the outcome wasn't necessarily reflective of that. I was kind of relying on other people. So I remember then moving on from that towards running is that all started when we graduated high school and my now wife, who was my partner at the time, she got me a Nike GPS running watch for Christmas. This was just after we finished high school. And I think it was Boxing Day 2012. I was like, right, I'm gonna go out for a run. So I chucked the watch on. And I think I did, I don't know, 5 or 6 Ks or something. And I was like, right, that was kind of cool. I wonder if I could do that again. And just I'm a very type A personality. I like the numbers. I like that side of things. And I think when you had that old Nike app back in the day to give you your totals for the month and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, right, I'm going to try and run a few more Ks. And I didn't run heaps that first probably like year. I just get out, a few times a year. And I was like, this is kind of cool. But my sort of interest in the longer stuff came because in year 12, I actually did the 48K Kokoda Challenge. And that was because my wife had done it. That was her third year of doing it. And she'd said, oh, you footy boys should put a team in. Like, you guys can do that. And typical like 16, 17-year-old myself was like, yeah, if you guys can do it, we can do that. So I did this 48K trail race that quite hilly here on the Gold Coast with a few of the guys I played footy with. And I think it took us like 10 hours or something to do it. And I remember being really, really hard. And we'd done some hikes and training. And I remember finishing in a week or two later, I was like, I reckon I could go longer than that. Like they have a 96K. I reckon I could do that. So then kind of once I got this watch and started running, I was like, right, I'm going to do this 96K Kokoda at some point. Like I need to do this. And that probably sparked my interest in like the long stuff. And then, yeah, like I said, the first year was just, I probably ran like 1,000 Ks for the year. I was just getting out a few times a week and doing some runs. And I jumped into a couple of trail races and things. I think I did a half marathon at Gold Coast Marathon that year. I want to say that was like maybe like a 145 or 147 or something back
Is this
then.
just
Like I
out of
kind of
school?
just,
Sorry, Carl.
yeah, this was probably
And
the
what sort of
first year of
year
school.
talking here?
I finished school in 2012. So that would have been 2013. I did those for that first half marathon and a couple of trail races that I was doing off about 15K a week running. So like suffering through those races, I had no business doing them. And then, yeah, I feel like I look back now and at the time I thought I was turning a corner and training really hard. And I was probably running like 50 or 60 Ks a week in like the start of 2014. And I did it was called the North Face 100 back then, but now it's called the UTA, the Ultra Trail Australia. I did the 50K in the May of 2014, and that was my first ultra. And that was probably one, again, I had multiple times in that race going, I'm never doing this again. Like, why am I doing this to myself? And I finished that. And then I think it was 3 weeks later, I'd got wind of the fact that the Gold Coast 100K was on. And I thought, I knew that at that point, that was an under 20 Australian record. And I was still, would have been 19 at the time. And I thought, right, I'm going to go get this under 20 Australian record. I, again, was doing not very much running and then decided to go run 100Ks up and down the Gold Coast. And I remember thinking, oh, it can't be that hard. I've just got to jog for the day. I don't even have to run hard. That can't be that hard. And I found out very quickly how hard running 100 kilometers is, because the first 50 wasn't too bad, but the second 50 was a bit of a supper fest. But I think I ran like 9 hours 48 that day, which I look back and I'm like, I don't know how I did that off what little running I was doing. And how then pretty much nutrition? The next, like, oh, terrible. I can't remember what I was even having at the time, but it was definitely not enough and it wasn't the right stuff. I had no idea what I was doing. It's just eating a bit of whatever I could find. And just, I can remember there was one point I was laying in like down one of the side streets. I think it's called Jefferson Lane near Palm Beach, like cramping with my hand, like my leg up in the air, laying on the road. I was in all sorts. I'm like, what am I doing here? But got through that one. And that was a fun experience. And pretty much then, like, just, I just went from race to race. Like, I just was racing ultras heaps and like, wasn't training a whole lot. You're kind of limping your way through races. You'd have to have a week or two down. I'd do a few runs with the guys and then we'd be like, yeah, let's keep going. Let's do this. And then we'd jump into other races as well. And I reckon that first 3, 4, 5 years, I just kept racing way too many. I reckon, I don't know how many ultras I'd done in the first couple of years, but I kind of just jumped into just racing all the time, long stuff. And yeah, like I said, the marathon hadn't really even crossed my radar at that point. I was just jumping in all these long races. So that was kind of my first few years in running, was very much all these stupidly long races that I had no business doing.
Yeah. So leading into training now, Kyle, how does that look week to week for you? Because you know what I've got from that is that there's a lot of variation in your running and life, and just wanted to sort of see how that looks from Monday to Sunday.
Yeah, well, it's so that my week now is probably pretty standard, because the ultras, I think I'd race, I actually went back and looked at this because I figured we'd chat about it. I started off and I think I did up until probably the start of 22, I did my first marathon in 2021. And I think before I raced my first marathon, I'd done 22 ultras and maybe 4 trail marathons, and I'd never raced a marathon. I actually got the Gold Coast 3-hour pacing gig in 2019 with the balloons, and I'd never raced a marathon. I don't know how I got that gig. Someone lined it up for me. So I'd paced the Gold Coast 3-hour group before I'd even raced a marathon. I don't know how that happened, but managed to do that. And then, yeah, I've kind of moved the last few years is very much been more marathon road traditional training focus. So for me, a week is kind of Monday, I normally still take a group out on the trails. So we just do a little single trail loop. That's kind of my work group I've done for probably about 6 years. So we just go out and jog around the single trails for an hour and have coffee. Tuesday is our kind of like interval session. We'll head down with the group at Main Beach where we train, and I coach most of them, and we'll do a kind of interval type session. Wednesday tends to be like a midweek medium long run, anywhere from, you know, 20 to an hour 45, depending what we're training for. And then jog Thursday. Friday is more of our kind of threshold, maybe marathon session, depending where we are on the block. Saturday's either rest or an easy day. And then, yeah, typical Australian model, Sunday long run. We'll get out there and, you know, that can be anywhere from hours 45 or so. Sometimes there's some marathon stuff, but that's pretty much me on repeat most weeks. And occasionally I'll chuck a bit more trail stuff in there or a few more hills, but you know, that model works and I've been sticking to that for years now.
Yeah. And what I want to know too, Kyle, is because I see you running out there with a few well-known Gold Coast runners too. And Dave the Runner, he's one of those. Like, yep. How does your training look in terms of who you run with? And then also this will lead nicely too into your actual personal coaching. Are you running with the people or runners that you coach, or is that something that is separate?
Yeah, it probably started initially, like the group that I run with at the moment started off with like 2 or 3 of us that just used to meet up and do sessions. And that was just me doing my sessions and a couple of them would jump in. And it's kind of just grown and grown. And like, I had the coaching very separate to that initially. And I'd say now with our group, I don't coach all the group that train with us. Some of them just come and jump in sessions, but I would coach maybe like 2/3 of the group that come down with us. And then there's a couple other guys and girls that'll kind of just jump in for do some sessions with us, and they kind of guide their own training. But it's been kind of good. I've been pretty open and happy for people to just kind of come and jump in and do sessions. At the end of the day, the more people that's there, the better. Not too fussed on that. So I probably coach most of them, but you know, if people I coach decide they want to come down and run with the group as well, like people are always welcome and we can kind of adjust training accordingly. But initially it was kind of a separate thing because that was kind of my training. So I've always never really made it like, right, I'm there just like coaching everyone else and I'm just on the bike or anything. Like that's still my training, but there's certain people that'll kind of just fit in with what we're doing. And if that's the case, they'll come down and train as well. And if not, so like I said, like Dave and a few of the other guys will kind of just jump in and just kind of enjoy being part of the group.
Yeah, rightio. So this group, when you meet up, is it just pretty much you just arrive and go for a run, or is there someone like you that's at the front, the face of this so-called club or
Yeah.
group? How does that work?
I guess it kind of is. Like, I suppose it is unofficially, like, I suppose my coaching group. I just don't officially coach everyone, but I suppose I set the sessions for the morning. So we'll kind of all meet up at, we tend to start about 4:45 at Main Beach, and we'll all meet there and go do about a 5K warm-up jog, kind of out and back down to surface and back, and then we'll kind of change shoes and stuff, walk across to the main set of lights where we start our sessions, and then we'll kind of just get into the session, and everyone tends to be doing slightly different things. So the ones I coach will obviously know all the paces that they're running, and I'll often try to set sessions that are time-based so that we all have the same turnaround point. So we'll often run from like Main Beach up towards the Spit, kind of where the Gold Coast Marathon went this year, up past SeaWorld there. So we'll that road and to the end and back's about 10, 11 kilometers, depending which way we go at the end. So we'll often do sessions where it's like, right, we're all turning after the fourth rep of whatever it is. So we'll all turn at the same point no matter where we are on the road. And we tend to make it a bit of fun because we all end up finishing back at the start point pretty similar. So it often ends up being a little bit of a fun race the last 500 meters because we're all in our last rep, and the people that are a bit faster tend to be running down the people that are a little bit slower. So we have a bit of fun with it, and I enjoy training with the group. So yeah, we always have a good time.
Oh, that's awesome, mate. So the runners in there that aren't getting that specific coaching from you, is it pretty much a free affair? And then you've got that extra service of runners who want that further guidance to have that paid coaching as well online?
Yeah, so I think for me, when it comes to the coaching, the actual sessions themselves, like, it's not rocket science. Like, that's the stuff that it's like, there's
Yeah,
only so
true.
many combinations of reps and sets you can kind of do. For me, it's probably like, I think the thing that, I suppose I'm speaking on behalf of my athletes, that they value is probably just having that person to kind of chat to, how they're feeling, do we need to modify stuff, bounce some ideas off. Like, that's the stuff that I probably see value in from a coaching point of view as well, is to be able to like guide people through training. So it's, for me, the what session we're doing, like, you could just go online and pick off a program that has some sessions in it that's probably half decent, and that's pretty easy. So for me, it's still, giving them a bit of that feedback at the time of kind of how they're feeling, how I want the session to feel, the purpose of it, all of those kind of things. But it's the communication outside of the sessions, I think, is probably the most valuable thing as a coach, because at the end of the day, you can't really just like write a plan and forget about it and just, off you go, do your own thing. I think it's that kind of information around it. So the sessions themselves, I suppose people jump in, like they can just jump in. Like, that's a free thing. They're not paying me to come and do sessions if they just want to jump in, but they're not kind of getting that specific, like, right, this is how I want you to feel. I want you to run this pace. If you're feeling like this, you back it off, push it, that kind of stuff. So again, I've always been open to people want to come and run. Kind of helps everyone anyway. So, and they'll tend to jump in with kind of whatever group of athletes. So like, we've kind of got a few different groups, and my coach people in all the different kind of levels. So they'll often just kind of jump in with them, and they'll kind of lead that little group because they tend to know how I want them to feel in the sessions.
Very good. Seems like you've got it all worked out. And with the payment too, is that something that they just pay up front, or is it an ongoing thing? Because as we sort of spoken about off air, I do a little bit of coaching too online, and for me, it's a weekly recurring thing where I say to them as an out at all times, if for whatever reason you've learned enough or you want to go another way, that you can just stop that payment from coming out of your account. And for me, it's a premise too of like setting the scene that this is a ongoing refining process, like you sort of mentioned, not just one, hey, here's a plan and see you later. Just wondering how you sort of work around that with the athletes, Kyle.
Yeah, so mine's similar kind of method. I use Final Search to write my plans for my athletes, so they'll get the app and kind of stuff. And I'll often kind of, it's just a recurring kind of weekly thing where I'll write their plan week to week. So I'm often kind of like Monday, I'll be writing for the following week, because I still kind of like to check in, like, with how they can kind of track how they're going with stuff, because that'll obviously determine then what they're going to do in the following week. So for me, it's kind of writing the plan on the app so they'll know the paces, intensities, all those kind of things. But then I've kind of pretty much got like an open communication line with them that, if they wake up and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do, like, I should be feeling this, then we'll have a quick chat about things, and happy for them to kind of modify or message me on the go. So it's kind of a recurring thing where I'll kind of set the plan, but often we'll always adjust things as we go. And like you said, they do it for as long as they need to, where they see value in that. And yeah.
Perfect. All right, Kyle, let's chat the podcast of yours. It was something I said earlier that we share in common, and it's probably a little bit different to what I do here on the Local Legends in Running podcast, where I rely solely on a guest, just a one-on-one style. And we've spoken off air too about challenges out there for podcasters, in the sense when you've got some kind of group or even one other person too. How does it look like for you? What's the name of it, and how long has it been around for the
Yeah,
podcast?
so ours is called the Racing News Podcast. We started at Tom and I back in 2019. So we've been on for just over
Oh,
5 years.
wow.
We've been recording it for. We initially were just doing monthly episodes, and now we probably do it roughly fortnightly. We had a bit of a break this year when Tom was overseas for a few months, but I think maybe done 115 odd episodes over that time. And it was kind of initially started because Tom and I, we'd go on a lot of runs together, and we'd just be chatting what's been happening in the running world. Like, we'd just spend like an hour or so just chatting through everything and stuff. And it kind of got to the point where we're like, I think people would be somewhat interested in this. And like, we'd run with people like, oh, this is actually quite interesting conversations. And we're like, let's just start it and see what happens. So we started it pretty quick off the back of that. And the concept was basically we were going to do it as like a, I suppose, kind of news bulletin of what's been happening with mainly Southeast Queensland kind of trail and road running. And Tom and I have both done a lot of trail running and ultra marathons as well. So we've obviously had that bit of a focus, which is not an area that gets talked about a lot in Southeast Queensland on kind of the other podcasts, but we feel like we've been doing it for ages. I'm like, there were still podcasts around in 2019, but nowhere near as many as now.
Ah,
So we've kind of just
post-COVID.
kept. So that's a very big spike in COVID. But yeah, we kind of catch up every fortnight and just kind of chat through, like, a bit about what we've been up to. Obviously, listeners want to hear a bit about that as well and follow that along. But just kind of what's been happening with all the races that have been on, road races, the trail series, pretty much just anything that anyone else from Southeast Queensland's been doing, whether it's interstate or internationally. So we kind of keep track of everyone and kind of how they're going. And yeah, like I said, we've done it for over 5 years, and I feel like it's just flown by. That kind of sounds a bit crazy when I say it like that. It doesn't feel like we've been doing it for that long, but yeah, we love doing it, and I'll probably keep doing it for a while.
It's good, mate. And I'd like to sort of find out about the listenership to it and how much you sort of promote the podcast. Like, I'm looking at the page right now and you've got 500 followers. And for anyone out there, even if they've run their own personal account, they'd know that getting followers is a hard thing, isn't it? And sometimes it isn't even a goal, like an intention. Like, for me, I'd run my podcast regardless of how many followers I have. Now I've got 1200, but we look at Inside Running, for example, they're between 10 and 12,000, I think. For the kudos, I think even more as another podcast out there. Then you look at triathlon podcast, you might know of Jack Kelly, the Triathlon Hour. I think, what is he, 30 to 40
It's a
thousand
lot.
followers. And then we now have so many running influencers too, individual sort of profiles pushing out. Dave the Runner is one of them. We've just spoken about him. I think 5 or 6 thousand odd followers too. So is, yeah, do you follow the listenership much or promote it in a way to try and get it bigger and bigger? Or are you sort of just happy enjoying it and seeing what comes out?
It's one of those ones where we're such a niche podcast that we've kind of, and we've known that from the start. We've kind of just capped ourselves. So I think I just actually had a look. I think our last post on Instagram was December 3 last year. So we're over a year since we posted anything, which is not great for getting followers. So it was kind of something we started and did a few posts, and then we haven't really touched it. So we don't do a whole lot to promote it outside of that. We'll put stories up occasionally, but again, we just kind of, it's a real kind of like grassroots local type cod podcast. Like, we're talking about this time so and so ran up a segment on our loop, which we call the Goat Loop in the Nerang Forest here every week. Like, it's something that if people aren't from, even like, I suppose Brisbane's almost a bit of a stretch for us. It's a very Gold Coast oriented podcast, but we're okay with that. I think we enjoy doing it. And even from the start, we did a bit more of the other stuff. But, and like we were saying just off air, like, there's so many podcasts that do just like, you got Inside Running Podcasts and these other ones that kind of dive into depth with all the big stuff, that we keep it very, very local, to the point that I'm like, not many others kind of talk about the stuff that we talk about. So I feel like we don't have a, I've hundreds of listeners, but they're all people that are probably local and just like listening to us talk about what's been happening with local runners. And a lot of them probably get mentioned that wouldn't obviously get mentioned on a lot of the big podcasts. So I think we've probably got a very loyal listenership that enjoy listening to us talk about stuff that people outside of our little area would have no idea what we're talking about. So we kind of enjoy doing it for that reason. And it's never been something we've done as to kind of try to grow as a massive thing. We love doing it. And you know what I mean? Like, so we've kind of got our core listeners that have probably been the same for a long time. And we've probably got more listeners in the trail running world than we do in the road running world. We often link up with a lot of the trail racers and event organizers and chat with them about things. So we kind of more in that space than the road stuff. But obviously, given I've done mainly road running the last few years, I've obviously dropped a lot of that stuff into that podcast as well. But it was very trail focused when we started. But yeah, it's like the same as you. Like, we do it if no one listened almost. Like, we enjoy, it's the same conversations we have when we're out on a run anyway, Tom and I. We just end up doing it sitting in front of a microphone. But yeah, like I said, we do it because we enjoy doing it. It was never supposed to be a massive thing.
Well, if you enjoy listening to podcasts, than get a hold of Racing News Podcast. And it seems like the title suggests what it's all about, running news. And it's hard to come by these days. I saw Gout, the sprinter we spoke about earlier, on the front page of Courier Mail as I walked into the local convenience store. And I was just like gobsmacked. Like, of course, he's a ridiculous talent and he's the fastest now in Australia, all-time 200. But to see him on the front page was awesome. But to get any kind of news from podcasts is always beneficial. And there's one more out there. If you haven't listened to these guys, get on board with that. Mate, let's finish with the Osaka build-up and anything that's going to sort of comprise the next 6 months, even post the Osaka, because that's in mid-ish February, isn't it, from memory?
Yeah, kind of late Feb. So it's the interesting thing, I suppose, for us about Osaka is that, you know, we're doing a marathon training block through the middle of summer here for a race that's going to be, I would assume, quite cold. Like if you look at the historical temperatures, it's going to be significantly colder than one of what we're training in here. So that in itself is going to bring a few little challenges to this training block about kind of how we decide to take this on. Because again, you're not going to be able to run the same pace that I'm going to run in Osaka in these sessions. So the way I've kind of tried to, that I've already thought ahead with this is, and I'll probably mix this up as we're going, but I've kind of gone and worked out my heart average heart rate for different sections of Gold Coast Marathon and like what I know I can sustain through a marathon. And I'll pretty much be running a lot of my longer marathon stuff purely off those heart rate zones. So, you know, that's kind of how I thought ahead of how I'm going to have to tackle this, because if you look at what the temperatures probably are going to be in Osaka and what they will most likely be through most of our sessions here, you're probably looking at anywhere between kind of 7 to 10 seconds a K difference for those weather condition changes. So we can kind of take that into account. But the one thing that those, like a lot of the converters and stuff, don't take into account well is the humidity. And we've got a lot of it up here. So for us, it's very much going to be knowing kind of the efforts we're after in these sessions and kind of running them, I suppose, to feel, but having some type of data, which won't necessarily be pace to go off, which is going to be really tricky for us because, as everyone knows, like the thought of doing a block for a race where you're not really running at the pace you're going to run at isn't great, but also we can't run those paces in these sessions given how hot it is. So for us, it's going to still be, you know, still a traditional kind of marathon build, but there might just be some variations on the types of sessions I'm doing and how I try to get that intensity and volume in there. Because at the end of the day, you've got to be able to sustain it week in, week out, and it is going to be hot. And at the same time, we're working, got families. It's not like we're just sitting in a nice summer training camp and we can just recover and sit in the aircon all day around it as well. So it'll be an interesting build in that kind of regard, because I think the weather will be a challenge for training. It's much better to be going into a cold race rather than the other way around. So I'm thankful for that. And the other bit I was talking to someone about this morning that I think will be interesting, and it'll be good to kind of chat to Clive about it as well, is just the fueling plan for race day, because I've never raced in conditions that cold. Like if it's, you know, traditionally it's low single digits, if not cool, it could be cooler and, you know, say even anywhere between 2 and 6 degrees. If it is that cold, like training in, you know, 24, 25 degrees and humid over here, the amount of fluid you've got to take on is going to be completely different. And then that'll be through all sessions. Like we're not going to be able to mimic our nutrition intake at all in this training block, because you just can't, because it's going to be less in Osaka. So there'll be some challenges in this and a couple of little unknowns going into the race that'll make it interesting, and kind of you really got to listen to your body in this race. But I'm excited for it. I have trained through summer before for races. I haven't trained for a proper marathon block with that kind of intensity through summer. So that will be interesting to see how everything copes with that. And again, anyone that lives, probably listening to this, living up in Queensland, summertime, like training is challenging at the best of times. So I will kind of take it as it comes week by week with it, but I've kind of scaffolded out what I think the block's going to look like. But like I said, I'm looking forward to getting into it, and we'll take it as it comes.
Yeah, and you mentioned that word we, is there others around the Gold Coast scene or within that group that you run with who are doing Osaka? Obviously, yes. We're going to try and get you back on here. Yeah. Sorry, Kyle, with Clive. But Clive's in Brisbane, and I'm sure you'll talk about your training on this very podcast and off it. But yeah, what about any others that you know of, or just even, you know, runners you can jump in with a session who can pace you, or a similar ability that maybe are running events early next year? We've got like, you know, Noosa Marathons in May and a few others, Gold Coast Running Festival, isn't it, in March-ish? Is that right?
Yeah, kind of end of March, early April. And we're kind of lucky for us, like in our group, there's often a few guys that I'll run with that'll probably run similar pace to me, so we can kind of do sessions together. But there's four from our group that I coach, or including me, there's three others that I coach that are heading to Osaka as well. So we entered as like a group for Osaka, so we all got in. So Marty, Chris, and Rinny. Marty will be aiming for around, he went to Chicago, but long story for him, but he actually rolled his ankle in a pothole at about 26K and had to stop. So he had a bit of an unlucky day at Chicago, but he'll be aiming for around 250 in Osaka. And then Chris will be run with, he'll be going, he's run 246 before, but he hasn't been doing as much running lately, but he's gone over there to have a bit of fun. And then people probably know Rinnie. She was eighth placed at Gold Coast Marathon this year. And, you know, she's won the Sunshine Coast Marathon in Canberra. She'll probably be running, like, she ran 236 at Gold Coast and will be looking to kind of run a PB in Osaka. So she's always someone that, like, she's pretty close to me in training. Obviously our times aren't super different. So we'll often run a lot of sessions kind of together, which is always good. Like I said, long runs, especially, she's super strong in the long run. So I'll kind of have her to train with. And then there's a bunch of other guys that'll kind of jump in for sessions and at least do part of the sessions with us. So I should have people to train with the majority of the block, which will be useful. But yeah, four of us from kind of our group will be heading over to race, which is exciting.
Very good, mate. Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, we'll try and tee up a road to Osaka series. We did a road to Noosa series. I'm not sure if you listened to that.
I'll end up being
Paul Goulet, Brisbane runner, and Brooke Williams down in Baruga, New South Wales. And that was fantastic to get an insight into, you know, their training, a female, male, or two males. And we just loved that idea of sharing the insights into what we do for training, and very much looking forward to you and Clive being on here to do that. Not that I'll be running Osaka. I'll make that very clear. I'm not. I'm signed up for the Gold Coast Marathon. So maybe I can tee in some of my training there as I sort of guide and host you guys through your training. Or potentially I'm thinking maybe of doing a Road to Gold Coast series with a couple of others. So if you're listening to this, put your name forward, and looking for potentially two other people to join the podcast. So thanks for your time today, Kyle. We've learned a lot. You've certainly got experience in so many ways, and such a smooth talker, and offered so many insights into what you do. So thank you.
No, thanks for having me on. Like I said, I've listened to episodes for a while, and it's a pleasure to be on, and hopefully people got something out of it, and look forward to chatting with you and Clive in the lead up to Osaka.
All right, mate. Love your
Cheers,
work.
mate.
Thanks,
See
Lee.
ya. Likewise.
See you later.
Catch ya.